Welcome back to Three Decades of Tragedy, History of the 30 Years' War. So last time I talked about the war between France and Spain and Italy, which was a mixed bag on both sides, as France secured Savoy after a messy civil war, but lost control of a minorly important pass, though that pass was irrelevant after the fall of Alsace. They also lost influence in the papacy, Spain gaining a stronger grasp after Pope Urban VIII died, the prick of Innocent X becoming Pope next. The war then moved to the Pyrenees Mountains, where France made little ground, but did force Spain to expend thousands of men and damage their fleet. It also agitated elements in Catalonia, who chafed under Spanish authority. So France, while losing their campaign, still cost Spain time as they had to deal with two internal revolts, one in Catalan and one in Portugal. But this wasn't the only front that they were fighting, as they were also fighting further up north. And with that covered, let's get started. France and Spain were still engaged in battle in Flanders, both of them pushing for their own objective. If Spain could win, then Ferdinand could pull troops from the area, and if France won, they could bring more men into Germany. This war was tying down both of them, and directly impacted the war effort in Germany, even if Spain didn't directly gain from that. Spain and the HRE were both pushing for the other side to win in the war, which frustrated their allies, especially when imperial help was promised but not delivered on due to needing to fight the Swedes, and continually being delayed at a minimum. Spain did pull men from Flanders to attack into France during 1636, which driven by their initial success, but still kept their garrisons on the Rhine, meaning there was no peace with the Dutch, meaning that those thousands of men were still tied down. The Dutch at this time were also politically divided. Henry Frederick able to keep the peace party from gaining power, but only a few areas of the war were really fully supporting him at this point. The politics in the Netherlands was pushing for a peace, and France's alliance with the Dutch was questioned because that would just encourage more war, as that meant more money coming in to support said war. Frederick Henry was being pressured to negotiate, and the alliance was particularly frustrating for the Netherlands because the promises that conquered or liberated lands would be allowed to spread Catholicism, which went against what Calvinist refugees wanted, who just wanted to go back home. And on the war front, the Dutch attacked Breda on July 21st, 1637, capturing it by October 7th. France also made gains, capturing Landrecies and Maubeuge, removing any gains Spain had made since 1625. Breda was a major stronghold, and the Dutch could fortify the lines with the capture of it, and act as another rallying point and invasion launching point. And the fact that Spain was mostly fighting on its own, the Imperials staying out of the fighting, meaning that they were fighting two enemies on their own. This basically forced Spain to try to find a way out of the war with the Dutch, as it couldn't fight both at once, especially with their stretched resources. Negotiation was a way out, as pure victory was not possible. Getting out with honor was the best path available, as you didn't want to look like you lost the war in a negotiation. It hurt your reputation. The war in Flanders and the Netherlands was back and forth in 1638, France and the Dutch leading a coordinated offense in the southern and northern Netherlands, which captured some ground before a counterattack against them pushed back a bit, the Dutch retreating after a sortie from Antwerp captured 2,500 besiegers at Calais, which is one of the biggest defeats of the Dutch in the war so far. Again, there's probably more dead and wounded in that battle, but that's a lot of prisoners taken. The Imperials were forced to aid the Spanish, who withheld subsidies to force Piccolomini to help relieve the Spanish and attack the French at Saint-Omer. Granted, force meaning Piccolomini had to follow through with his obligations, not any sort of, like, unfair treatment or bribery blackmail. It was, can you please do your job? The French, under the command of Richelieu's relative, attacked Spain and Luxembourg, another army sent down to pin the Imperial army to keep it from interfering. The French's goal was Hesdin, and even the king was there, meaning they could not easily retreat from that place. The Imperials managed to surprise the French at Thionville and broke the siege, leading to the French losing 7,000 prisoners and some of their best regiments, which are not easily replaced. But because of the king, the French had to continue with the siege of Hesdin, which did fall by June 29th, 1639. And with the fall of Hesdin, the Imperials were called in to assist in pushing back the invasion of Bohemia, which I covered earlier in the podcast, if you guys remember. And for the Spanish, this would be the last major military aid that would be given to them by the Imperials, meaning they were definitely on their own at this point. This would definitely present problems with the Spanish, but we have 4 years before we arrive at the famous Battle of this war. And with France sending more resources to Flanders, the Spanish able to gather up another fleet with thousands of reinforcements for Flanders. Taking resources from one part of the war to another does that, and France was having to juggle several fronts at once, just like everybody else but the Swedes, who had less men and resources than the empires it was facing or allied with. Still significant, but not the same overwhelming strength that France or Germany could possibly have if they were united. This army was meant to open up a new offensive. France sent a fleet to try to stop them, but were unable to stop the Spanish fleet as they gathered and prepared, so the Dutch had to deal with it. The Dutch engaged them in the English Channel with 17 ships, which were outnumbered 5-1, the Spanish alone having 70 warships. And they fought the Spanish to a standstill after the overconfident Spanish admiral charged the Dutch like a bull. And as the battle that day ended, he retreated to the port at Dunkirk to resupply and fix and all that. As described in the book, Oquendo is like a brave bull who is ferociously attacked by a pack of hounds and blindly charges those which assault him. So he is with his ship full of dead, wounded, and mutilated, gallantly tacked upon those which were nearest to him. So effectively, he was not really acting tactically sound and just engaging in fighting, which was not good, especially when you're on the flagship, which miraculously didn't go down during this battle, and didn't go down in the next battle, but you'll see what I mean when I describe it. The fleets did both retire, like I mentioned, and the Dutch were reinforced by a fleet from the Dutch Indian Company, which gave him around 103 ships, which let him outnumber the Spanish. The Spanish were defeated the next day, a good number of the remaining ships of the Spanish retreating safely. Even the flagship that took 1,700 hits, which was a hell of a hits to take. That's a lot. That ship should be under the water. But it managed to limp out of the battle, and the Spanish once again docked at Dunkirk, and the Dutch blockaded the port. The 4,000 men were able to slip through into Spanish lines over time. It was still costly, and cost the Spanish thousands of men, 12 admirals, and 100 ships, which was costly in a war of attrition, which the Spanish could not afford, as this is over time. This isn't just like immediately. This is people getting sent over and over and over, trying to break the blockade, or slip past it. This drew resources away from other fronts, and the unified French and Dutch were able to strike at the Spanish, capturing Arras after a siege, and that only got worse for the Dutch by November of 1640, Turin being relieved, and the next month the Portuguese rose up in revolt, adding to the Catalan revolts. Artois also fell, the Spanish having to fall back. With these losses, Spain was in a bad position with money, having very little they could give to their nominal ally the following year. And their skilled ambassador in the imperial court had also returned, which left less influence over there, as well as the fact that the imperial representative in Madrid was very forceful in his opinion that Spain was wasting its resources. Spain was clearly in a worse position in this war, having the formerly terrifying empire no longer the power it used to be a century ago. France was harried on both sides, but it was looking more and more they could at least handle the Spanish as a whole, even if a direct invasion really wasn't possible. And since Spain was increasingly getting worse, they were getting pushed into a corner. The relationship with the other Habsburgs was not as strong as it was before. Military support basically stopped. Their money was getting strung out, so Olivares tried to encourage French dissidents against Richelieu, finding any connections to try a Hail Mary at the war. Richelieu's ability to deftly negotiate and run French politics was helping the country, and Olivares tried to use the connection to the Queen of France, Anne of Austria, to try to remove the minister. This involved asking the English to help fight against France, which normally wouldn't be hard, but England was headed into civil war, so that took that off the table. There was a failed plot in 1641 to raise the Huguenots with supporters from England, but that fell apart as the English didn't arrive, and the death of the lead conspirator, Poussin, basically broke any chance of it succeeding after there was some initial success at attacking Boulogne. This plot let Richelieu sweep up these enemies, securing himself and stabilizing the French politics. The king's brother fleeing, as he was implicated in this as well. I don't know if this is true, none of my sources confirm one way or the other, but he was clearly an enemy of Richelieu, or at least someone that Richelieu wanted to get rid of, so it made sense why he fled. Duke Charles was also stirring up trouble, rebelling after he agreed to rejoin France as a vassal, but he was unable to really hold anything, so he was in Luxembourg after about 5 months of attacking into Alsace. These two events, however, did cause the French to be unable to take advantage of Arras being taken, which led to two defeats in the Netherlands when their armies couldn't coordinate, the new governor defeating the French forces and capturing a war chest. So it wasn't all smooth sailing, the French still having similar issues to Spain, but they had a much more skilled minister in the war effort and diplomacy, whereas Olivares was basically becoming a scapegoat for the Spanish failure, which only made sense once you're aware he was very autocratic, running his policy while not being great with people. He was not as smooth as Richelieu, and because personal power really relied on your ability to maintain personal relationships in this time period, it would hurt you if you used power like a hammer rather than a scalpel. Quote, methods of government became more and more autocratic, his manner more tactless, his reactions more unreasonable, end quote. So even people of his standing or in court were regarding him as a bit of a not good leader. The court began to create rumors against him, which weakened his base even further, and eventually the king sent him a resignation letter, leaning heavily on him to leave office. The request was to give him a graceful way to leave, and the public put more pressure on the king to not let him stay in office. And the man did eventually leave office by January 22nd, 1643, and the king took this chance to rule himself, although he was a firmly okay ruler at best, never really inspiring people and relying on the nephew of Olivares to guide him. But policy remained the same under Olivares, not much changing. Spain was basically in a rut, unable to adapt to this war and continue to bleed men and money, but France also had a change-up of leadership as well. Like I covered, Richelieu had died in 1642, and the king had died soon after, leaving King Louis XIV the next king, the 4.5-year-old. And yes, this is that King Louis, the Sun King. But for now, he was a young child who needed a regent to rule in his place. Queen Anne quickly secured her power base and rose as the regent for her son, giving rewards to make sure her supporters were loyal. It is said the phrase, "the queen is so kind," became popular at this time. And if she's maneuvering, that probably was a way to get her favor and to keep yourself from getting to hot water. She acted in continuity of Richelieu, letting his protege Mazarin run policy, the French drafting peace policies for the terms that would be set. But to the chagrin of Philip IV, the queen and Mazarin, who weren't native French, were loyal to France, despite them being foreign. So the Spanish king's peace terms were rejected, with France wanting to wear down the Spanish to get better terms. Mazarin did differ from his mentor, as he was focused on territorial gains, wanting a quick gain of approval, willing to forget the idea of German liberation and the universal peace, as he also was a bit more practical and minded for more short-term gains. Not saying he wasn't in the mind for long-term, it's just he had to shore up his own power base, as Richelieu had been firmly established, so he could flex a little more without getting into trouble. So this as a whole was a mass change of leadership for both Spain and France. But France and Sweden were still close, and the policy of changing where they focused on the war in Germany would continue to adapt and improve, and would, by 1645, settle into its position. But next time we come to the end of this trilogy covering the Battle of Rocroi, that would be essential in the war up north. I want to thank you all for listening, and the social media links will be in the description box or on the links themselves. You can email me at 3decot@gmail.com. Reminder that I have a Patreon, and thank you for those who support me, and please review and spread the word, and I'll see you guys next time.